भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय.
This is the verse we read yesterday. Yes, so we'll read it again and see if we can hear some of the commentary of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Katwa makanda mahati kulashila rupa.
Katwa makanda mahati kulashila rupa.
Vidya vayo javinadam ubiratmatuyam.
Vidya vayo
Dhirapatim kulasvati navanit kanyo. Kalein risinga naralokamano abhiramam. Katwa makanda mahati kulashila rupa. Vayo Gavinadam Abirat Matuyam. Dhirapatim Kulavati Navanitya Kanya.
Dhirapatim Kulavati Navanitya
Kanya. Kale Nrsinga Naraloka Mano Viramam.
Kale Nrsinga Naraloka Mano Viramam.
First means, or the translation is, O Mukunda, you are equal. Now, also, after I finish reading the translation, I'm going to ask if anyone remembers anything from yesterday's class. O Mukunda, you are equal only to yourself in lineage, character, beauty, knowledge, youthfulness, wealth, and influence. O lion among men, you delight the minds of all mankind. What aristocratic, sober-minded, and marriageable girl of a good family would not choose you as her husband when the proper time has come? Okay, who remembers something from yesterday's class? Beauty of Krishna is unlimited. Can just try to think about what that means. Unlimited beauty. Thank you. Did you remember something from?
The story about the person with the cloak and the rats following him to the cliff, and they should be attracted to the cloak of Krishna.
Yes, not to be enchanted by the materialistic way of life, even though it is being promoted so heavily by contemporary society. Oh, how is materialism being promoted? Only a very fortunate person can escape from that. And where is that materialistic way of life leading us? Over the cliff means to certain death. And then our next life, where will that be? No one knows, no one cares, no one considers that. No sense of morality, no sense of shame. Just enjoy, enjoy, enjoy. There's no future, just materialism. And the result is, we can see the result in the world too. It is not that people are becoming more satisfied by their increased materialistic attempts and endeavors. Rather, people are becoming more dissatisfied, more miserable, practically speaking, because the Bhagavad Gita describes, in the second chapter, it describes trying to satisfy one, what does it compare, trying to satisfy one's material desires, what does it compare it to?
The fire.
Yes, the fire, yes. And pouring what on the fire? Fuel, oil, ghee, whatever. And the result is that the fire burns more brightly, it increases, and it desires to consume more and more and more. That means more and more dissatisfaction. Haribol, Prabhu. Haribol. Such a nice kirtan, lively, happy kirtan from a lively, happy soul. Thank you. Anyone remember anything else from the class?
He's saying how this material world is a reflection of what's in the spiritual world and stuff. We're attracted to things in this material world. Just imagine, what things must be like in the spiritual
world. Yeah, how attractive. But how do we know that the spiritual world is real? Of course, none of you would ever think something like that. But how do we know there is actually a spiritual world that's so far vastly better than the material world, and the material world is a reflection? Yes. And what happens if we don't?
Chaos.
Yeah, chaos. But why do we believe in the Shastras? Why do we accept the Shastras authoritative? Yes, they're given by the Supreme Lord. But how do we know it's really given by the Supreme Lord? Because there are so many books that so many people call shastras. Why accept this shastra over that shastra? How do we know that any of them are real? What is the what argument Prabhupada gave in this? Let's hear everyone else's thoughts on this. It's a heavy question actually that comes, may occasionally visit the doubting mind. Yeah, that's what Prabhupada answered it, and that's, I'll speak about more about that in a moment, but I'm sorry.
If they say the taste is in the pudding, so if you follow Shastra, you see that it works.
Yeah, the result is there. Yes.
Intellectually, it makes sense.
That there's a spiritual world. Yeah. But the ultimate, in what sense? Why don't you explain that a little more?
If you rationalize existence,
yes.
The only conclusion that you can come to is that there is a spiritual world, but this is a temporary situation, yet we're eternal.
Yes.
So,
but how do we know that that is the spiritual world, as opposed to someone else may have another conception of what the spiritual world is? Yeah. Taste. Yes. But the ultimate thing that Prabhupada said, because I've watched him argue this point, he said the acharyas, that these great personalities have accepted these shastras and are following it to such a degree. They accept Goloka Vrindavan, they accept Sri Radha and Krishna as their life and soul. Prabhu, Open. One open, please. And an example, of course, is Srila Rupa Goswami. The six Goswamis are such wonderful examples of this. They are our heroes. And actually, it is natural for the psychology of a human being to require a hero, or many heroes. And who are the heroes, the people that those in contemporary civilization look to and wish to emulate? Who are the typical heroes?
The youth.
Huh?
The youths.
But okay, who do the youth look to for their role models, for their examples, their heroes? The music stars. Such low character, you know. Such low character. So no wonder if you have a hero with low character, what will the follower have? Huh? Very low character. Or he may not have the facility to get the heights of lowness that the rock stars get, the exalted amount of degradedness. But we need heroes. And Srila Rupa Goswami, of course, Srila Prabhupada was, what a hero Prabhupada was. If you want a story to inspire you for courage on the spiritual path and your spiritual service, you won't find any greater hero than Srila Prabhupada. And the story has been told so many times and so close to our time too. When we hear about Srila Rupa Goswami and Srila Raghunath Das Goswami, we may think, oh, that was hundreds of years ago. How we can't do things like that now. But we hear about Srila Prabhupada and how he left his the sweetest position in Sri Vrindavan Dham, living peacefully, but inspired by his Guru Maharaj, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's order. He left Vrindavan Dham, even though he was 70 years old, which is, you don't really feel like doing something adventurous when you're 70 years old. When you're 17 years old, you're all open for adventures, the adventures of life. But at 70, strange culture, strange place. People who had no concept of Krishna. My favorite little story of Prabhupada that illustrates that was when he, in the very, very early days when he was preaching, I may have already said it, please, but it's so wonderful anyway, that Prabhupada was explaining a point in 1966 to the group of people who were interested, little bit interested in Krishna consciousness, and he was explaining how God, Krishna's transcendental body, never becomes old. This is something, a very important point, if we want to establish personalism, that God is actually a person. He's a person with a personality, but not like we are. Not with a material body that crumbles. Not with a material body that is so limited, and ultimately it's just a whatever beauty is there in a material body. It's just imagine how beautiful someone is with the layer of skin pulled off. And when you see them, and all you see is their bones and their veins and their muscles and the blood corpuscles and the arteries and the veins and the internal organs and the intestines. Did you ever see someone's intestines? They are not very beautiful. Any doctors here who perform? Yes, there we are. Have you ever seen intestines?
Yes. Before medical students, I went to an exhibition and I saw the big intestine. 40 feet long.
From a real person?
No,
oh, that's not what I'm talking about. Plastic intestines or something like that. I'm talking about the real thing. I've seen one time, I've seen intestines. Someone got shot. And he was holding, oh, it's not something pleasant. Not something pleasant at all. There's no beauty in this kind of a body ultimately. What makes us think that the material body is beautiful? It is Maya, illusion. It covers up reality. And we are projecting our concept of what is beautiful upon something that ultimately isn't beautiful at all. And Krishna's body is not like that. It is beauty personified. This is what Rukmini Devi was saying in this verse. With the quality of beauty that you have, who would not choose you? Who would not become attracted to you, O Krishna, with your beautiful, transcendental body that never becomes old, never becomes gray, he never loses his hair, his skin doesn't become flabby and wrinkled. He has a transcendental body. So Prabhupada was trying to explain the transcendental nature of Krishna's body to people from the West who had no concept like this. So he said, Krishna never becomes old. When he was on the field of Kurukshetra, at the battle of Kurukshetra, speaking to Arjuna, he was perhaps 125 years old, but he was not old. He looked like a 16-year-old or a 20-year-old. And then he said, you will never, therefore, because Krishna's transcendental body never becomes old, you will never see a picture of Krishna as an old man. And then he talked to the audience and he said, the people who are listening, have any of you ever seen a picture of Krishna as an old man? And then blank faces. And then he said, have any of you ever seen a picture of Krishna? No one who he was speaking to had ever even seen a picture of Krishna. And trying to, in this incredibly hero's journey, when you have nothing to offer them except Krishna and they have no concept of Krishna. So when one is a hero, one is superhuman. Krishna Shakti Nahivina Tarpavartana. What does that verse mean? Does anyone know? That no one. Bole? Nahi means no. Vina without. Krishna's Shakti, Krishna's potency. Tarpavartana. One cannot spread Krishna consciousness without Krishna's power being behind one. We need heroes who have character, who are noble souls, and let us imitate them. Let us get our strength from them. So we've moved from the question that I had asked, which is why do we accept the Shastra and the descriptions of Golok Vrindavan? It's because our acharyas accept that, and these acharyas with such heroic personalities. Rupa Goswami gave up his position as the prime minister, practically, or his brother was the prime minister. He was, he was the head of treasury for all of Gaudadesh, all of Bengal, of Nawab Hussain Shah, had so much power, so much wealth, so much influence, and gave it up, tuchavat, as if insignificant. And what did he gain instead of that? The chanting of Krishna's holy name, sitting in Vrindavan Dham like a mendicant, like a poor person, like a beggar. But yet, fully blissful and fully satisfied because of constantly being in contact with Goloka Vrindavan. It is not possible, because for a person who has tasted wealth to live in a poverty-stricken condition with no lamentation unless he's experiencing something so sweet, it makes his former position of wealth and power and influence seem completely pale and insignificant. Able to give it up is insignificant, not having to think about it, not lamenting about it after he's given it up. Not saying, oh, I remember the days when I could have had this. No, insignificant is one gives up, excuse me for the example, stool. This is what Rishabhdev meant, after passing. It's not that one laments it. It's graphic, I know, but this is the example that the acharyas give. So how could one do that unless one has a higher taste and is tasting something so sweet, tears coming from their eyes? So one may think, oh, don't worry, you can have your position back. You can go back if you want to you can become a wealthy, influential person. But no, the tears are coming from their eyes because their heart is melting in the ecstasy of their service of Sri Sri Radha and Krishna and Goloka Vrindavan. So Prabhupada sometimes say, do you think these personalities who are beyond the cheating tendency, who were so realized they had no tendency to cheat, they were honorable, the most honorable of persons, why were they most honorable? We mentioned this in the class yesterday. How could one attain true character and integrity in this world? Remember what we spoke about yesterday?
Yes. The values in the living, there's no gap.
Yes, that's what the definition is. But how could one be like that? What tempts one to make a gap between what I believe in and how I act? Yes, but more, we want something. We want something, we're missing something in the world, and I may have so many values, but when it comes to satisfying, getting what I want, the values go out the window. Getting, you know, I'll cheat, I'll lie, I'll steal, because I want something with a passion. But these personalities, so that causes the cheating in the world and the lying and the stealing. But these personalities, there's nothing that the material world could offer to tempt them from what they already had. Nothing. The material world couldn't offer any trinkets, anything that could make them leave what they had any more than you could offer a billionaire. You tell him, I'll give you a job and I'll pay you $10 an hour, or $2 an hour, or $1 an hour, if you just give up what you're doing and work for me. Well, what? He's going to be tempted by that? It's insignificant. He already has so much. So the wealth of these personalities was so vast, like an ocean. Bhakti ras amrita sindhu. An ocean of bhakti ras. Amrita, nectar, deathless nectar of ecstasy. And they're tasting that, and the material world is going to offer them something that's going to lure them, tempt them, seduce them from the spiritual platform? Not possible. So no cheating tendency exists in their heart because there is no selfishness. There is full satisfaction. Because when you want something, it means that you don't have it. Desire enters the heart when we feel a lack of something. Fish doesn't desire water. He's living in water. The billionaire doesn't desire... why does the billionaire keep working? He doesn't desire money. What does he desire? Power. He doesn't desire money. He desires power. So that means he doesn't have power. The person who is all powerful doesn't desire power. The person who doesn't have power desires power. The poor person desires wealth. The hungry person desires food. The person who has just eaten a huge feast, he doesn't desire food. Even if you offer him food because there's no desire, no, it's all right, I've had enough. It could be your favorite food, but if you're full and someone offers it to you, you don't take it because you're full. So these personalities, these heroes, these Goswamis were so full in their love for Krishna that there is nothing in the material world that could tempt them into lying, cheating, stealing, etc. And because they are saying, yes, you follow Shastra. And Prabhupada would sometimes say, do you think they are great? They are fools or something? That's like a materialistic person or some members of some religion, they'll think, we're standing in front of Radha Ballava, Gornatai, Jagannath Baladev Subhadra, and they think this is some type of foolishness. They think it's some kind of idolatry or something. But do you think the 1 billion people in India, everyone is a fool, that they don't get, people go to the deities and pray, and they're not getting anything, they're just being fooled? I've heard Prabhupada answer like this, this question like that. You think these people, 1 billion, you're so arrogant, he didn't say that part, you're so arrogant that you know so much of the truth that you can say that these people are so foolish that they think that they're worshipping God, and they're actually not experiencing anything at all, they're not experiencing any protection, any realizations. Because you have your concept that this isn't follow your path and what you understand reality is. What arrogance! What incredible arrogance! So as it usually happens, if you look thinking and it really bothers you, some person's such a fool, it just comes pointing back to you. Who's the fool? Who's the arrogant fool? So, very much, especially in the beginning, before we have our taste, our own taste, our own experiences, we follow as faithfully as we are able, as our, who said, the Shastra, the path of the Acharyas, Maha, Jana, Yena Gita, Sapanta. And because the great teachers, the Acharyas, are persons of sparkling character, of integrity, who are so satisfied that there is no cheating propensity within them, and so realized and so tasting the sweetness of Goloka Vrindavan, of the pastimes of Sisi Radha and Krishna Radha Balava. So we can understand that that path is a wonderful path to follow. So we do want to make these personalities, these personages, our heroes, and follow their example. And then, in a matter of days or months or years, or even lives, depending upon how we, our own sincerity and fixedness, then if we follow the path that they have walked on, then we will get the result that they have gotten. If we follow the path they are recommending, then we will get the result that they are tasting. So Rukmini Devi, we'll go to the verse now. She continues speaking. She's glorifying Krishna. This was the verse we read yesterday. And she's praying to him, begging him to please accept her as his wife, because she has already given herself to him, saying that after hearing about you, your qualities, and how you delight everyone's mind, who wouldn't wish to accept you as a husband? And as he said in the previous, who could accept anyone else? So in today's verse, she says, she moves towards what she wants from Krishna, what she's requesting him. She says, Tanme bhavan kalo vitapati rangajayam atmar vitascha bhavato atavibho videhi mavira vagam abhimarsat tu chaya arad gomayuvan rigapate balamam bhujaksha. Therefore, my dear Lord, therefore, meaning after glorifying Krishna's qualities, and in the previous verse he said, after hearing about you, I fix my shameless mind upon you. And here she says, therefore, my Lord, I have chosen you as my husband, and I surrender myself to you. Chosen you as my husband, and I surrender myself to you. I place myself in your service. Please come swiftly, Almighty One, and make me your wife. My dear lotus-eyed Lord, let Sisupal never touch the hero's portion like a jackal stealing the property of a lion. I'll read it again. Therefore, my dear Lord, I have chosen you as my husband, and I surrender myself fully to you. Surrender myself to you. Please come swiftly, Almighty One, and make me your wife. Because she was going to be married in a few days to Sisupal. That was arranged by whom? Older brother, whose name was? So please come swiftly, Almighty One, and make me your wife. My dear lotus-eyed Lord, let Sisupal never touch the hero's portion like a jackal stealing the property of a lion. I have given myself to you, O lotus-eyed Lord, and I am meant for you. If this jackal, you in the previous verse, she called him Nrisingha, which meant lion-like man. Lion amongst the men. So you are a lion, and Sisupal is a jackal. What is a jackal like? There's no jackal. Are there jackals in Australia? Dingoes. They're basically the same. They're just dogs. So the lion, that which is meant for the lion, is going to be taken by the dog, a jackal, whose only business is stealing and howling in the moonlight. A low animal. Okay, who remembers something in this verse? You remember something, yes?
It's the last part about jackal.
Yeah, jackal. Make it a sentence.
Just trying to stay away from
it. And you remembered something about a jackal. Very good. Okay, let me read it again. This time I'm giving you a warning. I'm going to ask you. Therefore, my dear Lord, and just try to enter the sincerity of a prayer. She's given herself fully to Krishna already. And she's not whimsical, like today I'll give myself to this person, tomorrow I'll give myself to that person, and the next day I'll give myself to that person. No. And this will come out if we can get to Vishwanath's commentary, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's comment, or later on, because she's going to say, if you don't accept me, I'm going to end my life. Okay, I'll read it. But I'm going to ask what you remember. Therefore, my dear Lord, I have chosen you as my husband, and I surrender myself to you. Please come swiftly, Almighty One, and make me your wife. My dear lotus-eyed Lord, let Sisalpal never touch the hero's portion like a jackal stealing the property of a lion. Because we could easily, if I ask now, everyone will say, like a jackal stealing the property of a lion, because it's the last thing. But not that one. Something prior to that. Raise your hand. I'll call it you. Yeah? Yes, oh lotus-eyed Lord. So beautiful. Yes, thank you. Yes.
You may say that Shishupal can't take position of Krishna as a hero.
Yeah.
He doesn't have any hero qualities.
Yeah, he's a jackal. He was envious of Krishna. Thank you. Anyone remember anything else? Raise your hand. Yes, Paul. I've given myself to you already. And what did she say? What, there's something right in the middle of those two points.
Well,
that's what I said, but she doesn't say it in the verse.
Please come swiftly.
Yes. And what does she say right after please come swiftly? What name does she call Krishna?
Almighty
Lord, the Sanskrit. What is it? Yeah. Vibhu, all powerful one. Vibhu, almighty one. Here, omnipotent, all powerful. Because the Almighty Lord, wherever he is, because he is all powerful, Vibhu, so unlimitedly powerful, he can come immediately. He can come swiftly. Instantaneously. So there are many things we can learn from this that are directly applicable to our own spiritual lives. And the one from this, let's just look at this in an interesting way. There are three sentences. One, two, three. Three sentences in this verse. First one is, therefore, my dear Lord, I have chosen you as my husband, and I surrender myself to you. Completely she gives herself to Krishna, because she has her relationship with Krishna. She has chosen him. There's free will. Everyone has free will. Some people, by their free will, choose right now to leave the class, even though their bodies may be here before our eyes. But we have free will, each and every one of us. We have free will. Prabhupada said this in one of the in that morning walk that we heard at the retreat. Krishna is not a rascal like us who gives something and then takes it away. He has given us our freedom, and this is the proper use of our freedom. If we cannot give ourselves immediately to Krishna, but at least we should give ourselves to the process of giving ourselves to Krishna, of bhakti, of sharanagati. And this is a product of our free choice. And Krishna will not force us He will not take away our freedom, because when there is no freedom, there is no love. When there is freedom, there is the possibility of love. And what Rukmini is saying, and it comes out in the third line, that there is no one more worthy of our full-hearted love than Krishna. This is a true Mahatma. He sees Krishna in all living entities. Sa Mahatma Sudolava, very rare. Who will we give our heart to? The materialistic society fills us with this romantic idea, which even in the Western society wasn't there until the 1200s, you know, that this unbreaking love, forever I love you, between the husband and wife. It's just silly romance, because it won't last forever, it can't last forever. Because, especially when the love is between bodies, which are so temporary, and the skin is lifted, and the beauty isn't there. We are meant as souls, mama eva angsa jiva loke jiva bhutasana, to give ourselves to Krishna with full surrender, full hearted surrender. I am yours. And Krishna promises that if someone one time in the form of Lord Ram, as we heard when in the relationship to when Bibhishan came to him and surrendered, he says, if someone one time, sakrid, I don't know, does anyone know this verse? I really wish to learn it. If one time someone says to me, Lord Ramachandra says, oh my Lord, from this moment on I am yours. So Krishna, Lord Ram says, a person who says that, I will protect them and give them fearlessness. I will never let go of them. So this is how Krishna reciprocates with someone who gives themselves to him. Who is more worthy of accepting us than Krishna? No one is the answer. Second sentence. Please come swiftly, Almighty Lord One, and make me your wife. Because the Almighty One, wherever we are, whatever our circumstances, He can be there immediately. Come swiftly. Who else can be there immediately? Instantaneously. When our prayer is sincere and full-hearted, if Krishna so desires, He can be there immediately. When our desire is intense, Krishna's coming is immediate, instantaneous, because yayatam mam prapadyante tam stataiva bhajam yaham. What does that mean? He reciprocates. When we have lukewarm desire to be with Krishna, Krishna has lukewarm desire to be with us. If we turn our back on Krishna, Krishna turns his back on us. Of course, he can't do that, because even if he turns his back on us, his back is no different from his front. And that's what it's like being in the material world. He's coming to us in a different way, trying to teach us lessons in a different way. The futility, the uselessness of our attempt to turn our back on Him, because we are living in Krishna, we are dependent on Krishna. Nothing other than Krishna exists, in fact. Mama Angsa Tejo Sambhava. All of existence rests on Him. But if we face towards Him in a tatra loyam api mulam ekalam, and actually desire to be with Him sincerely, fully, then He reciprocates. And even if we are inconsistent in that desire, if one time we sincerely call out to Him, He never forgets that. And he stays with us, although we may get lost. So she says again, please come swiftly, O Almighty One, and make me your wife. Because she's asking the right person, the Supreme Person, the Almighty Person, to come swiftly. Because he has the capacity to do so. There can be no obstacles once he desires something. So the devotee thinks, well, how can I incline, make the Lord inclined to come swiftly? This is a meditation for a devotee. How can I increase my devotion? And then the third, my dear Lotus Eyed Lord, let Sisupal never touch the hero's portion like a jackal stealing the property of a lion. So we have some, Krishna has blessed all, every living entity, every soul with their individuality, with their special gifts. And they should be given to Krishna. They are meant for lion-like Krishna to be used in his service, not in the service of jackal-like, our jackal-like senses who try to steal away everything as if our life is meant for sense enjoyment. If our life was meant for sense enjoyment, that would mean the proper engagement of the senses would be sense enjoyment, then one would expect one would feel satisfaction from sense enjoyment, but instead we feel dissatisfied with sense enjoyment. And when the senses, Rishikena, Rishikesha, Sevanam, Bhakti Ushate, are used in Krishna's service, like the, then we feel satisfaction. It's natural. One mukti, mukti hitvanya sarupam sarupena vastati. Mukti, liberation from the miseries of this world means being situated in our natural constitutional position. That means in Krishna's service. What does mukti mean? Yes, and what does it mean that I just said? Yes, it means being situated in our natural position. Hitvan anyatarupam sarupena avastita. Swa rupa, our own rupa, our natural position, our natural form, avastita, situated. It's unnatural being in the material world. It's unnatural. Not suitable for us. Rukmini is speaking her love for Krishna. She's speaking on that level. She's, Krishna willing, we can talk about some more comments on her words by Vishnu. We'll talk about Gita Kaur tomorrow. But her motivation is her love for Krishna. And how has she developed her love for Krishna? Yes, by hearing about his. Yes. Tanestita Shutika. Tam Tanavan Manobhya. Okay, thank you very much. Any questions or comments?
Studying the canto, so please excuse my ignorance, but what is the status of Rukmini? Is she, it seems to me an audacity to ask Krishna to be your husband, and would be like me saying, Krishna, come in the form of Radha and be my wife. Maybe people would just laugh at you, and Krishna would just say, how dare you? Who do you think you are wanting to? Is she like such an exalted person that she can make a request like that? And if so, what level is that?
Well, she's actually expansion of Srimati Radharani in Dwarka Leela. But we can make all kinds of ridiculous requests, just like I can go to the government, like what's a real big company here in Melbourne? What's the biggest, most wealthiest company?
BHP.
So I can go to BHP and make a ridiculous request and say, I want by 12 noon today, please. I would like, I want just 3 or 4, maybe $7 million. So we can make our ridiculous requests, and then what will BHP say? Yeah, they won't say anything. They'll just take the card and chuck us out. But if the head of the company, who's so qualified, and say, I need this for this purpose and this purpose, and this is $7 million, $10 million, we're investing here and there. Immediately it's done. Because he's qualified. So how the reaction of Krishna, how he will react to the prayers of Rukmini will immediately let us know how qualified she is. He immediately comes. She says, come, I've given my heart to you. And he'll say, I've already given my heart to you. Even before you asked, I have given my heart to you. And he is there immediately, and he rescues her. The lion rescues her. Lion like Krishna does rescue her. Because she is the goddess of fortune. She's Krishna's internal energy. She's so much the goddess of fortune that when Sudama Brahmana comes, and Krishna steals from Sudama Brahmana, Krishna says he's a beggar, he's such a poor Brahmana, and he didn't have anything. And he begged some rice to give to Krishna, some flat rice, flattened rice. And Krishna said, you must have brought me a gift. And he was so embarrassed that he had this poverty-like gift to give Krishna and nothing else. So he was hiding. And then Krishna said, no, you must have brought me a gift, because when you've come to visit me, you must have, it's just, you know, just etiquette, it's just natural. Where is the gift you brought me? Where is the gift you brought? And Sudama was trying to hide it, and Krishna snatched away this flattened rice, and he began to eat it. He ate one mouthful, and then Rukmini Devi came and said, stop, oh my lord. What you have just taken now is sufficient to get the blessings of this person to make him more wealthy than Indra, the king of heaven. So she is the goddess of fortune. She saw someone offer, this poor Brahmana, offer something to Krishna with love. And she benedicted him with unlimited wealth, practically speaking. But the real interesting thing about that pastime, so she is the goddess of fortune. She is the chief Lakshmi Devi in Dwarka. But one really interesting thing that our acharyas have commented on that particular pastime, then Sudama came there for which purpose? What did he want? Huh? Yes, to meet his friend. But what was his?
His wife had asked him to go to Krishna and ask something for
them. Yeah, they were so poor that when he went to Krishna, there was nothing he could find in the whole house to bring him as a gift. So he had to beg that chipped rice. So he went, in his mind he wanted to see Krishna, and then he actually never asked Krishna, the all-opulent Supreme Person, for any wealth. And then and Krishna never said anything to him. And then he was leaving. And he thought, oh, Krishna is so kind. Because he knew that if I had wealth, I would, the tendency is to forget about this God when you have wealth. So he knows my tendency, so he hasn't given me anything. And then when he got to his own place, it was completely opulent, completely wealth, and he saw that Krishna had given him so much, unlimited wealth, more than the king of heaven. So then the acharyas reveal why Krishna didn't tell him, don't worry, I'm going to give you some wealth. And they explained that Sudama didn't have anything. And he had to beg something to give to Krishna. That means that he gave Krishna more than he had, than he possessed. And Krishna found himself in a difficult situation, because gifts should be equally reciprocated. So he thought, what am I going to do? He's given me more than he has, and everything is mine. So everything is under my possession, and therefore I can't give him more than I have. So therefore my reciprocation, my gift to him, can't be on an equal level with his. And he was so embarrassed by this, that he couldn't reciprocate equally with him, that he was so embarrassed he wouldn't say anything. So he didn't tell him anything. He was so ashamed by the devotion of Sudama's gift. That's what our acharyas have said. That's Krishna. That's the Krishna that we hope to develop our loving relationship with. He is not a dictator. He is not an angry God. He's the most charming, supreme, all-powerful Lord. It's the supreme Lord, the God, the Parameshwara, in his most fullest personal manifestation of his nature, a complete manifestation of who he is, the person, not like the boss at the office. He's the boss, he sits behind the big desk, you do this, you do this. But when he's home, he's playful, he jokes, he plays. Same person. But the full manifestation of his nature, that's Krishna, the full manifestation of the personality of Godhead in Vrindavan. This is Krishna in Vrindavan. The Lord, it is all powerful, yet most playful, best. That is the Lord that Srila Prabhupada is bringing us to, introducing us to, that Sisi Gonataya are bringing us to. And they are right here. So we should develop our relationship with Sisi Radhabalava. That's a good idea. Okay, we'll stop here. Did you have a comment, Prabhu?
No.
Anyone have any comments or simple questions that we can answer quickly? Yes.
I have a question that was asked about that. I was wondering if you have sent me some of the destiny and I've heard asked questions to your husband. And actually, the answer is there on the first, but she says that come and take your hero's portion, because she actually already belonged to Krishna. So that's
yeah.
She's actually not asking for anything for herself, she's asking him to claim what's already his.
Yeah, oh, that's nice, very nice. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he asks that a similar question to that and gives somewhat a different answer. And he says that because she loves him, that's what she's asking him to accept, actually. So when we have love for Krishna, there is no question of anything being audacious in our request. Because, as Bhakti Mataji is saying, that the love means always that you're thinking of the other person's welfare. There's no selfishness in it. There is no selfishness whatsoever. That's love. The bell is round, the class is over.